Christine Urquhart, you're known, of course, around the island as a victims' right campaigner. What decided you to stand for the House of Keys?
I've come across issues that don't only relate to the victims or survivors on the island, that are relatable to all of us with regards to lack of mental health care or lack of accessibility to it due to the waiting lists. Systems are broken, you know, one department isn't speaking to the other, and this is where victims fall through the cracks. And that's not just happening to victims of these crimes, that's happening to us all.
Now, was it your view, though, that you could be more effective within the system than outside it? Because you seem to have done pretty well as a campaigner outside the political system.
Yeah, something I've said before is banging on that door is only doing so much. I need to get in that door to help effect real change.
Of course, within the House of Keys, you're one member among 24. Do you feel you'll be able to further your cause?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's already members in the House and within the Legislative Council who support everything that I have been standing for. So I don't see any issue with that at all, to be honest, if they are re-elected.
Now, have you always had an interest in politics, or were you not tempted to go down maybe the local authority route first and cut your teeth on politics, so to speak?
I've always had an interest in politics and current affairs. It's something that my friends come to me if they want to find out what's going on in the world. Oh, Christine will know. With regards to standing for local authority, the change that I'm looking to effect won't happen there.
Now, obviously, mental health, social care, among your concerns.
Yeah.
What effectively would you like to see done?
Well, we need to bring those waiting lists down. And I think COVID has taught us that we can live in a virtual world and still be productive with it. So I think we need to start implementing a virtual hospital to help bring those waiting lists down. I'll give you some clarity, I'll give you some background for that. The reason being, I'm aware of a 72-year-old man, end-stage COPD, 24/7 oxygen user and is immobile. Had a 10-minute appointment at the hospital that took 2 hours. He's a bit agoraphobic because he doesn't leave his house very much. That caused him an awful lot of anxiety before the appointment and then after the appointment to settle down. All of that could have been the costs for patient transfer to get him there. All of that could have been avoided with a 10-minute video or telephone call because there was no physical exam required. So I do feel in those instances, we need to start, you know, get modern with our appointment system, and it will bring those waiting lists down quite quickly.
Now, the waiting lists, of course, have grown exponentially during the current crisis.
Yes.
Do you believe that has been entirely necessary, or has the health department, in your view, been using it as something of an excuse?
Eesh, I'm not sure that's for me to say. I think there have been excuses along the way, but I wouldn't like to say on that.
Now, inevitably, changes and improvements in any area of government require increased expenditure. Where would you believe the money will come from?
If we don't make that spend the money now, we're going to be spending it in 20 years' time. We already have a tsunami of health and mental health cases coming towards us that COVID helped. That was already on its way because people are now speaking more about their mental health, and there is more treatments out there. So regardless of where the money comes from, if we do not spend it now, we will be paying for it a lot longer down the line with long-term mental health and physical health conditions.
Now, in other areas of government, education, I think, is one of your declared interests. What is wrong with the system as you see it now?
I think it's not fit for purpose anymore. I think we need to find a new way of teaching the children. You know, you don't go into a workplace and you're doing English all day. It's all together. I think it's Sweden that has combined their curriculum into lessons, and the children learn more than just one subject within one lesson. I think we need to be looking at that. I also think that PE is a bit outdated now as well. I'd like to bring in a PE passport. So many children and parents are being run down because the children have recreational pursuits, sporting pursuits, dancing outside of school. And it's creating mental health issues as well because of the pressure. I think if we create a PE passport, the PE teachers can concentrate on the nutritional values and what keeps your body going, as well as the physical. We still have our sports in the schools. That could be part of the PE passport. But it takes the pressure off the children and the parents, and it allows the children more time for study.
We always seem to compare ourselves with the UK. Should we be looking further than that and aspiring higher?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The UK aren't getting it right. And the UK is not the perfect example for many things. I think we definitely need to set our sights higher and look further afield.
If within the educational system there was one particular aspect you would like to change immediately, what would that be?
Bring old-fashioned home economics back. Teach children how to sew and cook and just basic, the things that a generation have lost, really, because they weren't being taught that. And let the PE instructors deal with the nutritional values of foods and sports.
So back to basics in some respects.
Absolutely. We need to simplify. Everything's got so convoluted and so complicated. Just bring it back, simplify it, and teach the basics.
Now, you're standing in East Douglas. What other issues pertinent to the constituency are you concerned about?
Congestion, parking, the state of the roads. Douglas Promenade is obviously a major one, but I'm sure everyone's talking about that at the moment. But definitely the state of the roads. I mean, Douglas Promenade and all the traffic being moved around Douglas has created so much damage, and it's the pavements as well. I'm going to be such a girl here and say I've ruined so many heels or nearly broken an ankle so many occasions because the pavements aren't much better than the roads, to be honest. And parking, accessible parking, the congestion. We need to do a park and ride. We need to find a way. Use those horse trams that they insist on keeping, even though the Douglas Borough Council says they lose money hand over fist every year. Well, if you insist on using them, let's use them in a productive manner and ease congestion. Do something.
Now, a lot of people have been complaining about the promenade, all various aspects of the project. But going back to the beginning, were you a supporter of spending £26 million on restoring and renovating the promenade?
Not for over 3 years, I wasn't, no. Mm. It should never have taken this long to do what they've been doing. The Douglas Promenade did need regeneration. The way they've gone about it and the quality of life for those in Douglas East is shocking, absolutely shocking.
Now, East Douglas has a high percentage of people also working in the tourism and hospitality sector.
Yes.
Are you satisfied that enough has been done to help them during the pandemic?
No, absolutely not. You know, you've seen people on their knees crying with what's happened with the pandemic, and tourism was already dropping at a rate as well before COVID hit. They definitely need more support, but it's not just those. The hospital, it's the bars, it's the restaurants, it's not just the hotels. It applies to everyone. The little ice cream shop, you know, it applies to them all.
I've been told by somebody within the tourism sector that they feel like, in effect, they've been thrown under the bus during this crisis. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. But thankfully, now that we're learning to live with COVID and people are concentrated more on staycations, I'm hoping that the tourism for the Isle of Man will increase. We need to get the prices right on the boats and the flights to attract people here. And I think, you know, speculate to accumulate, basically.
What have been the issues that voters have raised with you during your canvassing?
It's mainly about, with Douglas East, it's the traffic and it's the roads, it's the congestion more than anything. It's the quality of life for Douglas Promenade. They felt like they've been living in an internment camp. It's lack of recreational areas. Douglas Promenade obviously comes into play there also. Brownfield sites that make the place look ugly. They're just sat there. Nobody's doing anything with them. There's so much regeneration that could take place in Douglas East that no one's really talking about, from what I can see, and these discussions need to be had.
Now, if you're successful in gaining election, would you be happy to work within the system and work as a member of department, as a political member, if asked to do so? Or do you see yourself more as a backbench maverick who would choose to remain outside the system?
I don't know if maverick's the word I would use, but I'm sure plenty of people would. But I'm not looking for a department seat. I'm looking to be an MHK for the constituents, learn the role. A department seat is not on my agenda at all, at this precise moment in time anyway.
It is the case, though, usually, that new members are assigned to a department. Is that something you'd be happy to accept?
It's not something I've considered.
Now, a perennial issue on a different topic is affordable housing. This comes up, I think, in every general election, and I think East Douglas is an area that is certainly affected by this. It's another declared interest of yours, and successive administrations have tried to find a long-term solution to this. What, in your view, would ease the problems the island faces?
I've heard other candidates and sitting politicians talk about attracting people to come here to the Isle of Man to live, which is all good and well if COVID didn't happen. It did happen. We need to get our infrastructure correct first. We have a healthcare system that is over capacity. We have education. I read this morning that come September, Ballycommeen will be 200 students over capacity. We do not have the infrastructure to attract people to come live here right now. We need to concentrate on the people who are here already and get these systems correct to support our own residents. Now, that with these people coming over, I have it on good authority from the estate agents, that is what's pushing the house prices up at the moment, because they want out of the UK. The Isle of Man is seen as a safe haven. If COVID should hit again, we get on top of it quite quickly. That is a major attraction right now, and we need to stop that. And then you've got business coming to the Isle of Man, who people say will bring employment, but they're not really, because there's only so much of a talent pool. So you're taking employees from one company and moving them to another. There's 0% corporation tax. What do they actually bring to the island? I might be naive here and someone could shout me down, but from where I sit, I think we need to be solely concentrating on the here and now and the people that live here now and get our infrastructure in place before we start attracting more people to come and live. And there's where one of the issues with regards to house prices.
You touched on corporation tax. You're standing as an independent, and often it's difficult to know the political leanings, if you like, of people who do stand as independent. They talk about issues, they talk about specifics. But if you were to describe yourself politically, would you call yourself on the left of politics, the right of politics, or are you centrist?
I think I'm on the left of politics, to be honest, but not so far left that I'm overly liberal. You know, I don't like these pigeonholes that people, you know, these boxes that people like to put others into, to be honest. I'm a people's person. I will intend to be a people's politician. I'll be quite happy to be the maverick on the backbench if that's what it takes to get a message across and to help the constituents. More than happy to do that.
Well, you're not tempted, though, to maybe align yourself with one of the political groupings on the Isle of Man in the hope that maybe you could create a stronger voice?
I was tempted. I was tempted, but I decided that I don't know what to say to that. Not all their values and opinions align with mine or mine with theirs, to be honest.
Looking at the government we've got at the moment, have you, would you say, and this is in very general terms, been satisfied with the administration or dissatisfied?
No, there are some good MHKs in government right now. However, they promise transparency every election, and they do everything to avoid that transparency that the people that they promised and that the people want and the people need. So no, I haven't really been. It's been this last 5 years that I've really, really took an interest in Manx politics because of the administration we have now.
Now, tell us a bit about your background. You have, I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, worked on both sides of the fence, so to speak, in both the public and the private sectors.
Yeah, I have. I've worked in various departments within government, in education, health, DfE, and all customer focused. And, you know, and this is the biggest customer focused thing I'll probably ever do, being trying to become a politician for the people of Douglas East. I gained lots of experience within these departments. I also became aware of many failings of these departments, which I look to carry forward and hopefully be able to rectify.
Now, you're a founder of the Ellen Vannin Victim Service, and yeah. This was based, I think, on your own experiences as a victim, in fact. As it stands now, do you believe there are large gaps in provision for people on the island?
100%. The victims are, you know, there's not a one place where a victim can go and that's it. You know, they go to the police, they go to victim support, they will eventually go to a SARC when that opens, hopefully in the next month. They're going to the hospital. The onus is on the victim to travel around all these services. Ellen Vannin Victim Service looks to combine all and put them under one roof, so the onus is taken off them, and they only need to give the statement once, and there's no onus on them to give that again, and to help support them through any court processes.
I think on record you've said once there is a victims shaming and blaming culture on the island.
There is.
How can that be changed?
How can that awareness? Be mindful of the words that you use. The press, unfortunately, they go for sensationalist headlines, which is great for that newspaper or that station. But the victim behind that headline is sat bereft at what that headline says, you know. Drunk 15-year-old underage sex. That's not what happened. That's drugged, raped child. You know, they need to be wary of the words they use to not re-victimise the victim again.
And finally, how important is it, not specifically in relation to the previous question, but in general, to have more women in the Manx Parliament?
I think there needs to be a balance. You know, we're all about equality at the moment. And I think that needs to be reflected in government and within our politics.